The way that I f- like in my private life is very different to how I f- on camera. Mm. You would know this 100%. As well. When I come to choosing guys, I have these trust issues that have come out of now being.
Let's flip the narrative. Let's talk about more of some fun stuff, Dan. What do you reckon?
Yeah, let's like dabble into the maths. Obviously, that's where I think a lot of people recognise you from.
David and I were in a pretty toxic relationship. He was a cunt.
You're in the porn world, so you become a trophy. As in, I can fuck you and then I can go and tell my mates and it elevates my level of boyness with the boys because I'm banging these girls that I'm...
Welcome to the Uncensored Podcast. Welcome to the Uncensored Podcast.
Welcome, guys, to another episode of the Uncensored Podcast. Today, we are here with Hayley Vernon, one of our beautiful friends that we have met in the OnlyFans industry about 12 months ago.
Yeah, excited for Hayley. Guys, if you haven't known who Hayley is, she was a star on the show Maths, the only Australian to ever get booted from the show. We're going to dive into that a little bit later. She's a former ice addict, which I think we're really going to tap into here because she now transpires her life into how she can help other people live in their own skin and not be sort of bothered by the social network or the drug addiction phase and this and that. So I'm going to waste no time and dive straight into all of this. Hayley, thanks for joining us.
Hey, guys. Lovely to be here as always and really looking forward to having a chat with you.
Well, before we dive into the fun
Let's dive deep, Jackson. I'm excited for this. A little bit nervous, to be honest with you. It's very different than what we generally do behind closed doors. Would you say that?
Yes, definitely.
Having a bit of a chat with friends.
This is fun. This is the first time we're doing a podcast before a scene. So if you're listening to this podcast, we're all going to go and shoot a scene afterwards. Normally we shoot a scene and then we bring the guest on. So you guys are getting the juice before the juice. So...
The juice.
It just came to me. I thought it was smart.
It ain't easy being cheesy, ladies and gentlemen.
I want to go back. I know people want to know about the social media stuff and the math stuff, and that's all well and fun. But let's go back before that started.
Yeah, sure.
Maybe who you were early 20. How old were you when maths?
4.5 years ago. So I'm 21. 36 now. 20. It's funny, and I'm gullible. I was like, no, definitely not. So I was 32-ish.
All right. Well, let's 32. Go. Let's go 10 years further back from that. So like your early 20s. I want to know what 20s. It was. What happened through that period? How did it go from a standard life into the drug world? All that kind of stuff that affected you.
So it would have started a lot before, say, 20. I was a highly functioning drug addict for the best part of my life, my adult life as such. Prior to that, I probably started using drugs when I was 16, 17 years old, recreationally. Then I come from a low socioeconomic area, so a place called Frankston on the Mornington Peninsula, which a lot of people know of as being kind of rough. It's kind of like your Mount Druitt if you're from New South Wales. Yep. It's kind of like the ghetto kind of area where drugs recreationally and drugs as the norm is kind of the standard. Methamphetamine use isn't blinked at or looked at twice. It's just something that just is.
So did you fall into it through peer pressure? Was it that everyone's just doing it, so I'll do it? Like, what brought it on?
Let's be honest. Let's be real here. I come from a very dysfunctional household. Mum and dad had a relationship breakdown. I had my brother figure hang himself when I was younger. And I suppose I had a lot of trauma that I just wasn't dealing with as a young adolescent. And that in turn made me reach out to other things that were a mere distraction and things that covered up the pain and the turmoil that I was kind of dealing with and having to come to grips with at home. And before I know it, you know, you start using on the weekend, you start partying. But what happens is the gaps between partying on the weekend and just using on the weekend, they become shorter and shorter. So instead of just using now on a Saturday, Sunday, you're using on a Saturday, Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, sleeping Wednesday, Thursday. And then that Wednesday, Thursday goes and it's becoming something that is so habitual and something that's so second nature. And before you know it, you're stuck in this cycle.
Was it, I guess I've never done a drug in my entire existence outside of steroids. I've never done a recreational drug and I haven't even smoked a joint. So because I had heart surgery at a young age, I always got too scared of like what would happen. So it's a blessing in disguise. So I always like to pick the brain of, was it, when people say addiction, is it because it made you feel invincible that made you feel good, or was it like a block to hide from reality?
You know what? A lot of people have asked me this question. I don't actually think it was the drug, and a lot of people will probably tend to disagree with me. I think it was the busyness that the drug created for me, the lifestyle, the fastness, the people. I was addicted to the adrenaline that lifestyle provided for me, because that within itself was an escape. The drug was part and parcel of the process. Obviously, you know, it'd be very naive to say that, you know, drugs aren't addictive, because they definitely am. But I had become addicted to the lifestyle more than the actual drug itself, to the bad boys, the chaos that I got used to. Actually chokes me up a little bit thinking about it, because I got addicted to kind of getting treated like shit. Because that was kind of like a punishment for me for what I'd been through. It sounds odd, doesn't it? There has to be something psychological about that. It was like a punishment because I wasn't dealing with what I needed to deal with. I don't know if that makes sense, but I suppose it's a lot of women could relate to bad relationships, how they go to bad relationship because that's what they're used to, kind of thing. But for me, it was like, this is all I deserved. What did I do to get into this situation? And it was almost like, I don't know, like my own form of like punishing myself for not thinking that I was good enough or worthy of a better life.
I can relate to that. I literally can't. But like, I mean, I understand the concept of, it's that programming. I know we're gonna talk a little bit later about relationships and how you go about them now and experiences you've had recently of experiencing that and how difficult it is. But did that mold relationships back then? Like, did you think the difficulty in good relationships now, do you think started from experiences back then? Or was it a completely different, like, what were boys serving that version of you? Was it just a gap filler? Was it a sexual pleasure? Were you looking for it like love back then?
I take it back like a step further than that. I think that my relationship issues from as a child, I'm very close with my dad now. I'll put that out there as a precursor to this conversation. But my experiences with men came down to the dysfunctionality between my mum and my dad's relationship at an early age. I had a lot of abandonment issues, which stemmed from my dad leaving my mum and their relationship. It was toxic. It was unhealthy. I was always looking for someone to fill the void that my father had left when he left us girls. And I was latching on to the wrong versions of men based on the dysfunctionality that I had seen in their relationship. So I thought that when you had a disagreement or when you had something that went on, you know, you yell and this is the way that you do things. So when I saw something good in a relationship, it didn't ever click to me that that's the way in which a constructive relationship should act per se.
And I want to tap into, so I'm a big believer in like network equals net worth and
absolutely,
poor influencing, good influencing sort of shapes how we operate. Was it a point where you just got so immersed into it that did you want to like leave and look outside the box, but you were so drawn back in? Like, I'm assuming the people around you at this particular time were also drugs and doing X, Y, Z and all the stuff were you into. Did it ever get to a point where you wanted to bail out of that and you just couldn't because of the environment around you, or were you just like the leader of the pack? Like, what point did it change?
I definitely have never been the leader of the pack in any aspect of my life. I have always felt that within society on various levels that I haven't really fitted in. I'm a bit of a lone ranger in that regard. I always knew that I was different, even as a drug addict trying to fit into that scene. Even in the adult industry, I'm very different to a lot of my peers, I'd say. And I would say my own opinion is that I don't really fit in within my industry now. That could be my own perception and that could be totally different. But back then, I knew that I was better than the situation. I didn't have the tools or the education piece to how to get out of it. And I'd kind of burn all the bridges with my family and with my immediate network so that if I wanted help or I needed a leg up to get out of certain situations, no one was there. It had got to the point where I used to call my dad and, you know, say, hey, and he used to be like, hey, Els, what do you want? Like, well, what do you want? And I'd be like, oh, I just want to talk to you. He goes, no, you don't. You need something. And, it was either that or he was waiting for a call from the hospital or from an emergency service saying that your daughter is dead or, you know, she's ended up, you know, in a violent situation. Because the thing about drugs as well is that the majority of the people that you're hanging around are criminals. So there's a lot of uncouth things happening. There's a lot of firearms and there's a lot of situations that really young girls and young men should not be involved in.
And at what point did you kind of say to yourself, like, it's enough, like, I need to step out of this?
Yeah, so I had had a big bender, like a big session, and I was coming down and I had money to get back on. And I remember trying to call people, like, to get drugs, but also people to hang out with, to get on it with, and no one was answering their phone. And I was thinking, I've got, like, all these people around me. And this is like a... All of this like was compounded and it had just built up and built up and built up. And I sat there like, and no one was answering their phone. No one. Like, and I had no one around me. No one gave a fuck. Like, no one gave a fuck about me. And they didn't even give a fuck when I had the money or when I had the drugs around. And I just like had a moment of clarity. It was honestly like someone was just like, if not now, when? This was like 7 years ago when bodybuilding first became a thing. There was this girl, Taylor. She was a WBFF pro. I followed her on Instagram or maybe Facebook, and she would have been 38-ish, 40, an older pro. And I was part of this chat group, this forum, and I don't know why she did it, but like a million people tried to do the same thing over the last, say, 10 years of my life, and I didn't listen to them. But for some reason, this woman's voice rang true to me, and she's like, what the fuck are you doing? Like, what are you doing? Like, wake up to yourself. And I'm like, oh, I'd love to do what you do. And she's like, why don't you fucking do it? Like, what's stopping you? Like, get off your fucking ass, stop being a bogan and get your shit together. And I think I had like maybe like $600 in the bank. Centrelink had just got paid, like literally. And I used to live Centrelink to Centrelink and then steal food during the week and spend all my Centrelink money on gear. And I had rang her and she lived in Benoa in Gold Coast, and I rang her. I had her number. She's like, oh, me and my partner, Mark, we're the managers of Sharks Gym in Southport. And she's like, this is when that first opened. And she's like, you know, if you want to get away and you're serious, we'll open up our house to you. And I was like, I don't even know this fucking woman. Like, this is absurd. And I just broken up with my partner. And I remember calling my dad. My dad's like, you're what? And I'm like, I'm moving to Queensland. And he's like, what? And that plane ride was so hectic because I was literally coming down on the plane after the longest amount of time on gear. And I was sitting there rattled. And I used to be a smoker back then. And, you know, I think, you're not going to understand if you've never done drugs and you used to smoke. And I was just like craving a dart. And like, I couldn't smoke. And then these strangers are picking me up from the airport. I don't even know them. I've never met them before. And they picked me up from the airport, and that was like a tale within itself. Like, literally, they had a mattress on the spare room of their house in Carrara, the Carrara golf course. That's where they lived. And I was a little bit naive in thinking after 8 to 10 years of drug addiction that I'd just be able to move up here. Everything would be great, because it wasn't. It wasn't. But that was kind of the first step in me realizing that I wanted better, that I was willing to give up my old self to become a new version of myself. And I suppose the one thing that I can say to anyone that is listening to the podcast is, with addiction, you just don't quit immediately. What ends up happening is that you quit the drugs for a certain period of time. So I moved up to Queensland. I was sober like for 4 days before I started looking for it up here. And then I used. And then I was sober for 8 days. And then I used. Then I was sober for 16 days. And what happens is that period between using becomes bigger and bigger and bigger until you're more the positive than the latter of the two. And that's how you kick something that's been the biggest aspect of your life.
And it starts feeling like shit. Like, I'd imagine when you're using so consistently, you're just always feeling the high. But then by the time it got to like using 25 days off, your body would start to regulate and feel good. And you would use again and you'd be like, man, I feel like shit now when this same thing.
You recognize it. You recognize it more, and you recognize like, fuck, this is why I've got the anxiety. This is why I can't look people in the eye. Like, you know, I was a nervous wreck. Like, my central nervous system was just so far shot that I couldn't look people in the eyes like I'm looking you in the, you know, in the eyes now. I wasn't a functioning human being. And it's so absurd and so funny because when I first tried meth, I was like, I explained to people I was like an octopus almost, you know, like eight arms and they're doing like a million things at once, like those cartoons.
Yeah, yeah.
Like that was me. I had like the typewriter going, the phone going, I was a finance broker. And then something switches. I really believe that it makes a chemical imbalance within your brain to a point where, not that it's no longer serving you because it's never serving you, but it reaches a point where it starts taking away from you.
When did self-belief and that kind of stuff become a thing in your system? Obviously, when you're using so consistently, you're so dependent on what the drugs are going to do for your ability to function and be liked and be social, things like that. When did you develop that internal ability to be confident or self-loving? Like, was that a process that just come the longer you were off, you just naturally developed like the who you were when you're not using, or was that a different process altogether?
I think because when I was a child, I've always, the version that I am now sitting in front of you, this is who I was as a kid. I've returned back to center. I've come full circle to who I am. I was the confident, loudmouth person. Like my nan has this story like of a train inspector trying to ask her for the ticket, and she had chemotherapy and she'd lost the ticket, and I got up on a chair and started yelling at the ticket inspector because he was like bullying my nan. I've always had extreme confidence. But then what happens in life is that you start to get beaten down by your circumstances and the situation that you're in. And if you don't have people that are backing you as well as backing yourself, your light dims to the point where it's almost flickering and out. So during that process of making those small steps, I started proving to myself that I was far more capable than what I thought and that I didn't have to settle for second best.
Yeah, yeah. It plays a big role on internal confidence too. Like I know we'll talk more about confidence and how things changed as you get older, but I think it definitely from the I've had like steroid abuse before, so I guess I understand the same level of like certain things make your brain feel worthy.
Yeah.
And then when you come off certain things, you start to challenge the same level of person.
Well, yeah, this is something else that's funny. I had this conversation with someone the other day. The thing about a drug user, an alcoholic, someone that has any form of addiction, gambling, is you're used to your highs being up here constantly. Like wins, this, that, rah, rah, rah. So to slip back into normal life, it seems fucking boring as fuck. You're like sitting in your lounge room like, oh God, this is pretty bloody mediocre, isn't it? Well, it's not mediocre, it's just normal life. So it takes a while to actually become content, not only with yourself, but content with normality again and not having those high dopamine spikes. And that is probably, I reckon, like one of the biggest processes with any form of addiction is trying to find your baseline again.
I want to talk about steroids. I know we live on the Gold Coast. Men using steroids is a very common thing.
Women using steroids is a very common thing.
But it's not spoken about. It's not like you can look at some girls in the gym and you can be like 100% she's using something because she looks twice as big as the guys. But it's not a real common.
But having said that, most your fitspo women, I believe to a certain degree, that aren't jacked and big and like massive are on some kind of enhancements.
Well, and this is where it's a good topic because I think it's a very uneducated topic. A lot of guys, even guys, don't to an extent don't really understand the steroid use drastically because we, you know, we make mistakes. I'm one of them. But from a woman's perspective, what do you use the same stuff we use? Do you use different?
Well, I don't use anything right now.
Not now. Through that phase, because I'm curious on it. Like, can girls just use like the same stuff we use, or do you have like a different?
Well, look, at the end of the day, I'm not a medical professional, so one would say not, because high levels of testosterone, is that it? Testosterone?
Yep.
Correct. in a female is never going to be good, but myself, even like when I wasn't doing bodybuilding, and I actually know a lot of girls in our industry that take Anavar to stay tight and hard, and Anavar is an anabolic steroid. But let's face it, like whatever you, like yourself, you're going to some guy at the gym that you trust that you like, oh, how do I get this? What should I take? Yep. Da, 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 da. There's no book for it. Like, you know what I mean? Like anything, it's kind of a guessing game to how you feel, how you look. Are you going to break out in acne? How are your moods? You know, and then you're playing around with dosages and whatnot, unless you're one of the few people that actually seeks a medical professional or a sports doctor, but that's few and far between.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, we're going to take a quick break. And if you're enjoying yourself, which I'm sure you are, locate that subscribe button because there is plenty more juice coming your way.
And I want to talk about, that's funny because like I don't understand the medical side of things too well, but women, you don't, this is a real dumb question here, but you guys don't produce,
dumb question, Jackson.
You don't produce natural tests, do you?
Yeah, girls produce testosterone, yeah, in lower levels.
Okay, so you using testosterone is not an antibody per se, whereas a guy using it to increase what he already has, you guys, it's the same effect?
To be honest with you, I'd have no idea. Mm. All I know is that when I used steroids, when I used to go to the gym, I used to look jacked. Mm-hmm. But that also had its consequences as well. My face shape started changing.
Oh, yeah.
Started changing and I started looking harder in my face. You know, there's consequences for everything.
It's a very different commitment for women, I guess. You've experienced both levels. Does your
$30,000 later, I'm looking a lot softer. So I get,
does it change your personality? Like, obviously, when you look masculine as a woman, because it's a rarity, I guess. When you see a whole bunch of guys jacking up, it's a easier on the eye thing because it's a lot more common. You don't see women super tank. Did that when you got to that point, you just felt massive and strong? Did it give you a different personality, a different confidence?
I don't think I ever got to the point where I was massive and strong. I definitely look like I was a fitness girl per se, like I had massive delts. Yeah, nothing feels as good as fit feels, does it? It's addictive to a certain degree. And
yeah,
Kayla's shaking her head over there. She knows it because it's true. Nothing feels as good as fit feels. And it's like anything. There's a very fine line between taking it too far and doing it just enough. And we live in a society that's like ever increasingly vain and into themselves. So you start to see things and you're like, oh, I look good. And you just keep going and going and going. And then with all kinds of body image things, I really do think that a little bit of body dysmorphia sometimes comes into play.
Yeah.
And you don't start seeing yourself how others see you until it's too late or you've lost what you had. And then you look back and you're like, and you'd know this, Jackson, as well. Mm. You look back at the photos and you go, fucking hell, like I actually look good back then. And then you're like, all I was doing back then is wanting to be more than what I was. Like I was missing the journey, like missing actually where I was.
And it's funny because body dysmorphia goes, like body dysmorphia is such a made up thing because it just comes down to like us, right? Because I know girls that have like.
It's a made up thing?
I think it's, well, because I know girls that are hell skinny and like Kayla follows girls that are like super skinny and they've got body dysmorphia. And then I know guys that are just jacked to the max and they've got it. So I'm like, is it an actual thing or is it just confidence a level space of satisfaction that we aim for? And because we don't quite achieve it, anything outside of that is body dysmorphia or a failure? Because I've found people that are 50 kilos and I know people at 120 in their muscle and they have the same mental issue when it comes to that body dysmorphia comfort.
It's definitely all relative to people and individuals, their individual circumstances, you know what I mean? And what you're saying is right. That's a good point, Jack.
Because it makes me, because we won't name names, but like there's plenty of girls where Kayla will show me and be like, look at her. I'm like, man, she looks amazing. And then she'll do a story of like, oh, I'm so skinny. I hate myself. And I'm like, look, it's so bizarre.
I know a professional bodybuilder at the moment who's thinking about going to Brazil to get butt implants and a BBL because she's in the adult industry.
Mm.
And now she doesn't think her body is good enough.
It's like, where does it stop?
Exactly. And I worked with her the other day and I was like, your glutes are like a shelf. I'm like, this is so impressive. I'm like, I would do anything for a booty like that. And she's like, oh, well, you know, I'm actually – and I was just like, what?
Because we live in a social media world where you girls are a lot more worse than guys, and I've spoken to a lot of girls that will openly admit it.
Are they, though, or is the discussion been having
– well, that's a good point.
Been having more
– girls vocalize it. No, girls vocalize it better. It's probably a very, very common thing with guys, but because the ego battle they have, girls can comfortably vocalize
– yeah.
It easier, but it becomes this competition, and social media is the damaging frame of, you'll find one girl that's bench pressing 150, but then you've got one girl that bench presses 20, but she can run 10K. And it's like this ever battle of everyone's so different. Why are we trying to do things to compete with people that
everyone's
are on a different,
trying to fit in the same box instead of being their individual selves? Like I did a post last night, I'm like, about people being on brand and being this perception, this tiny fraction of who they actually are instead of being their person, because like people are multifaceted, they're not one dimensional, and people are striving to be this one dimensional person. And I actually said on my post last night, I'm like, if you are following these idols and you don't know their values, you don't know what they're about. And just to give you some context, this stemmed out of the fact that people say to me all the time, they're like, you're so refreshing, you're so this, oh my God, you vocalize that. I'm like, fucking hell, if we live in a society where what I'm saying is refreshing, then watch out. Like, it's just that I'm saying the shit that you deal with in everyday life, like that mums and dads and people that follow our accounts, and life's hard, this is it. But if you're following someone that is like just so image-based 24/7, what the hell are they actually doing for you? Where does that sit with yourself? Because to me, looking at that, that's actually like doing more hindrance on you as a person subconsciously than what it is being a benefit, because you're now comparing your everyday existence to something that is so fine tweaked, so auto-tuned, literally auto-tuned. Their lives are auto-tuned, right? You're seeing, we know what it's like, Kay, like these photos, like, you know, we're in an industry that revolves around that, thousands of photos of all like 1 second movements trying to choose the best one. And, you know, then people are comparing their lives and saying that my life isn't worth it. My life's not, like, it's just bullshit. Like, it's utter bullshit to a certain degree.
It's funny because, and people get like, I'm this is a conversation from another day, because I don't think, I've said this out loud many times, I think depression is a very played on word. I think it does exist to a degree, but I think the level of people who claim to have it or claim to use it are very non-categorized depression.
Also, I've got something to say on this. Right? So I agree with you, but I also think that people aren't learned to embrace the negative as much as the positive. So when something negative does go on, they're like automatically go, oh, well, I must be depressed. No, you're just having a human experience. You're just having negative emotions, and that's okay. That's okay. You're allowed to have negative emotions, negative experiences. Like, not everything's going to be sunshine and rainbows, you know?
But I think it all comes from they're chasing the one thing that they think other people want them to have.
Oh, yeah.
When all that's missing is the things that they're not quite paying attention to. I see it happen to a lot of people. I've had close friends of mine commit suicide. I know people that have gone through it. And the conversation always comes down to they're so focused on what the perception that they think they have to fill and focusing on that, the couple things that they have to just fill the gaps on the outside. Like Kayla and I have been together for a very long time, and not one of us has really ever claimed. The only time I've ever probably used the word I'm maybe a little bit depressed was like directly after a stroke, which I feel like I can get away with because I had a fucking brain injury. So it's like a little bit allowed.
We'll give you that.
But it was like a couple of months and Kayla's like, pull your fucking head in. Like you're dragging on with this shit.
At some point, accountability,
I don't think people have in their real world, or they can't handle. When people are depressed,
snap the fuck out of it.
They like staying depressed. I've known people that
like using it as an excuse or for the sympathy, the pity party. You've got to draw the line, and you're right, the line in the sand. Mm. And at one point, you got to pick up your own bags and move forward, because no one's coming to fucking save you.
Mm.
No one except for yourself is saving you. And like, we all know how quickly time goes by as well. Like, and if you don't like get moving, like you end up ruining everything. Like, to be honest with you, like I just went through a breakup recently, and I'm going to say it. So actually, this is actually a really, I'm just having like inventory on, was I depressed? Was I not depressed? Now you've got me thinking, because I, when I was going through it, would have said that I was depressed, but based on other areas of my life, when I've gone through harder things, I probably wasn't. The real reason why I was probably feeling like that is because I've been so blessed over the last, say, 4 years, 5 years, and I haven't really had to deal with any heartbreak or truly negative experiences. So when I've compared it to what I've been through of late, I said that I was depressed. Was I depressed? No, it's probably just a hard situation and going through heartache, you know.
Tony Robbins is the only person in the world that can get away with saying it, but I was at his event, I can't remember what it's called, about 4 or 5 years ago, you know, the one where you walk across fire.
Mm-hmm.
And he's pulling this thing up and he's like, depression's not fucking real. Depression's a sad person that just wants more attention than the other sad person. And I was like, damn, like you're like the only human. If I said that, I would get crucified. I'm like, you can get away with it.
Jackson.
But he's like, put your hand up if you're depressed, in the whole crowd. And there's like, yeah, maybe 10% of the crowd put their hand up. And he's like, he picked one girl out. He's like, you're depressed, come the fuck up here, right? And she walks up all like excited for the stage. He's like, what the fuck are you doing? He's like, a depressed person wouldn't walk like that. Put your fucking shoulders down and mope your fucking ass to the stage.
Yeah.
And he's like, just pointing out that like, the fact that she was so eager to put her hand up, I'm depressed, but got her moment of attention and her whole physiology changed. And I'm like, this is so interesting. And then he's like, fucking, he's like, sit on the fucking ground, show me what depressed looks like. And she sat on the ground and she's just looking. He's like, that's not, he's like, put your fucking head down, put your knees up, look fucking sad. Mm. In front, there's like 20,000 people in the crowd and all of us are just like, holy shit. Like, we all understand what you're saying and agree with you, but we can't do it. He's like, your fucking shoes are dirty, get some new fucking shoes. Like, fucking hell. Like, just grilled this chick. And like, by the end of the show, she was the one running around high five and everyone happy as Larry. And like Tony always does, the obvious. She wasn't really depressed. She just wanted attention because she was lacking sadness in one area of her life.
Or was it that she wanted attention, or is it just her perspective on her reality and that other people, as you said just before, haven't been holding her accountable for the actual situation that she's in? So when you're stuck there with your own thoughts, it's very easy to put yourself into this little bubble, isn't it? That this is my human experience. This is what I'm going through. This must be finite. This is final. This is it. And then you go to someone else and you're like, oh, well, actually, that's not happening.
I think if you don't have, like I always say, like Kayla isn't a personal development person, but without realizing it, she's obviously shifted my aspect, because having that tough love of like, it's been 3 months, you've had a stroke, you're not dead, like shut the fuck up. Like, because there was times where I would, maybe not like sometimes that bad, because, but I also need that because I ask for accountability like that, so I can't complain when I get it. Mm-hmm. But people do drag shit out, and it was like, yeah, it was a stroke, it happened, I can't change it, I did it to myself because I overdosed on steroids. Like, but
did you? I didn't know that.
I didn't overdose, I just had the wrong, because I take blood thinners, I took too many compounds and it collided with my blood thinner and like I had a blood clot and shit. So, but like the easiest way I like to say, if anyone listens to this, like just go and look at someone who has a little bit worse than you, and it's the easiest way. So in my stroke ward, when I woke up in the bed next door, I had like right side pins and needly, right, my right leg and arm was fucked up, couldn't get a bone, and that kind of stuff. The lady opposite me,
that was the most fucked up thing he could.
Well, for a guy, like if I was to add that in, if I was to tell any guy in here, any guy listening, you don't get an erection for 6 months, that would traumatize a lot of guys, right? And so like that was reality. But the lady in front of me didn't know who her husband and her kids were when they came to visit. So I'm like, would I want to complain about my situation? Mm-hmm. And I asked the doctor, I'm like, what was the difference between our strokes? It was literally 2 millimeters forward.
Oh, wow.
Her clot was 2 millimeters forward, which is fucking like half a fucking 5 cent piece forward of her brain. And she had no idea who her visitors were. Crazy. And it was her two daughters and her husband. And I just watched with my own eyes. And I woke up with every recollection of everything, could function normally, minus
you know who Kay is, you know, tingly. Everyone. Yeah.
And I'm like, so I can complain about poor me, you had the stroke. Or I could be like, what if she doesn't get that back? She's now living in a household which for her feels like a that's strange environment, and her family, like that's, it's really easy for anyone here that wants to play the I'm depressed, my life's sad, like just look at someone who's a little bit worse than you. I mean, I scroll fucking Instagram, you'll see one kid in the hospital smiling and just have both his arms and legs cut off. It's like, you really got bad problems, or you just want some fucking sympathy? So that, I mean, that's enough on the depression topic, people. If they're listening to this and they've got it, hey, well, thanks to some quality injections,
we love that,
but it's definitely useful. Let's flip the narrative, let's talk about more of some fun stuff, Dan. What do you reckon?
Yeah, let's like dabble into the maths. Obviously, that's where I think a lot of people recognize you from. So, would you like to touch base slightly on kind of how you got into it and why?
So,
before you answer that, I didn't even know what maths was. So, because everyone was like,
got more brain cells for doing
We're going to go shoot with Hayley from maths.
We've actually never watched an episode ever.
You know, that's how I first learned about you. Oh, Hayley, we're going to go work with Hayley from maths. I'm like, what the fuck is maths?
You know what I found after maths? More guys were into it than women, and they used to have WhatsApp groups. So I used to go to pubs, and these guys were like, see our chat group? Do you want to see who we're like we're betting on? Oh, and you're a betting man as well. They would bet on maths, like who was going to win or what bride. Like, there's like you can actually professionally bet on that shit.
I have a few mates that watch it. Pa, I know you're going to listen to this. Sucker for that shit, and like I don't get it, but I do want to hear.
I can give you the hot tip.
I want to hear the answer to Kayla's question because I am curious about it.
So what got me into it? My boss, my boss at work, I was a finance broker at the time, and every Sunday we'd be like, how was the weekend, how's? And I'd be like, oh, I went to Woolies, did my shopping. He's like, oh, any guys? And like, I was in the prime of my life, like nice car, nice house, lived in Port Melbourne. I'd overcome like all the adversity with the drugs, this, that, and the other, set myself up, I was balling in my own right. And he's like, what is a girl like you doing by yourself? Like, because obviously I'd cut off all my old life as well, so I was rebuilding my social network, which is quite hard over the age of, say, I don't know what you guys think as well, like it's hard to meet new people outside of work when you like get older. So I was trying to build that up, and then my boss was like, Hales, it's like the last day, you have to like apply. And I was like, oh, fuck, I'm not applying. And then, like, he kind of got a whole, like, army of people at work to keep approaching me. And I was just like, fuck off, like, kind of thing. And so I started doing the form. And then, like, I love a chat, obviously. And there were questions, and they're like, answer the question in, like, full, like, and I was like, oh God, here we go. And, you know, there were like paragraphs, like it was like a book on every question. I was like, well, fuck, I can't write this without writing that. And like work had closed like for the night, and like, cause we had scans to get in our building, and I was still there at the community. I was like, bye Hayley. And then I was like, the next day, I was like, fuck, I was here till like 9 p.m. They're like, why did you put so much detail into it? I'm like, oh, well, fuck, if I'm going to do it, I'm going to do it properly, you know? And then this is actually a really funny story. So I submitted the audition, and then 2 days later, so you got to remember, my past come from having fuck all money, drug addict, debt collectors in my life back then, right? I declared bankruptcy when I was like 17 years old over a debt of $6,000, like ridiculous, right? So came from nothing, absolute riffraff, but I was also like a good person back then. I never did any like violent crimes or anything, but just like that was the lifestyle. So 2 days later, I was at work and I kept getting this call from a private number. And like I was just like, fuck off, like stop calling me. I don't answer private numbers. I don't know what you want, kind of thing, like as you do when you're young and dumb. And actually, like, I still don't answer private numbers, to be honest with you. Show your name. And then I got a message. It was like, hi, it's, I don't know, Pauline from Endemol Shine. We produce maths. Can you answer your phone? We've been trying to get a hold of you. And so I'm at work, obviously. I can't pick up the phone. So I'm like, can I go to the toilet? I'm like, hi. She's like, you know, why didn't you pick up the phone? I was like, I don't know. You could be a debt collector or something. And she's like, sorry. And I'm like, oh, I don't answer private numbers because, like, I could have owed you money or something. And she's like, did you just say that? And I was like, yes. Should I have said that? Like, do you want me to hang up? Can we do this again? And she was laughing, right? And I was like, and so that was, like, my first experience, right? And so this was, like, 3 years after, like, my drug addiction. So I cleaned up my life quite a lot, right? But there's – you can take the girl out of the boobs. Sometimes you can't take the boobs out of the girl with, like, things that I do, you know. And so, like, some of my responses, and you guys would know because, you know, we're friends as well as colleagues, that the way in which I talk, like, you know, sometimes it just comes out. So that happened. And then there were just moments along the way. I think it was, like, so there's about 14 audition stages. So you go from, like, paper to one-on-ones to psychometric evaluations, which I think that they do the psychometric evaluations just to set you up for failure on the show, to put you with someone that they know that you're going to clash with, like personality A, personality Z, let's go. And then I went down to Melbourne at the Como building. I also knew Telv, who had been on maths prior, who was married to Sarah, another contestant, and he'd said to me, like, if you get through to certain stages, like, you're guaranteed on, kind of thing. And I was in this room, and all the girls, like, I borrowed a dress off a girlfriend to go there because, like, I live in Nikes and, like, gym gear and hoodies, you know. And, like, it was a big deal for me. And, like, everyone was like, who are you? I'm like, I don't even know who I am, but I'm feeling myself. Like, this is great. And there were all these signs on the wall. They're like, don't talk to, like, other participants. I couldn't shut the fuck up because I was so nervous. And, like, I laugh heaps when I'm nervous as well. So, like, and they're like, shh, don't talk to other contestants. And I'm like, sorry. I'm like, too, like, you know, talking to anyway, the an editor or something, like, hit me on the shoulder, and I got so scared, like, I leapt off my chair, like, I jumped like 10 feet in the air, and I'm walking down to this room. She's like, you're gonna walk through the door, there's gonna be like Channel 9 executive, this person, that person, just, you know, be yourself. I'm like, I'm like, yeah, be myself. I'm like, fuck, what do I do? And I opened the door expecting that it was going to be a huge room, but, like, I opened the door and literally took one step and the table was, like, right there, and, like, you know, it was from here to you, like, away. And I was like, oh my God, like, hi, I'm Hayley. They're like, calm down. I'm like, oh, like, and I was a wreck. And then they, like, were asking me questions, and I was answering them, but one of the questions that, when I knew that I was on, was the question they asked me, they're like, oh, what's more interesting to you? Like, what do you like more, personality or looks? And I was like, oh, looks, but no, personality. Sorry, I didn't say looks. I said personality, but he can't have a head like a fucking kicked in Milo tin. And all their faces just went, like this. And I walked out of there, and I've said this a lot on various other podcasts and so forth, but I walked out of there and then called my dad, and I'm like, I'm on. Within 2 days, I went to work, and I pretty much stopped working for about 4 months, but I was still employed by the company. And because I was just like, I've manifested this. This is the change of my life. Like, I'm on this show. And then I just like, and my boss was like, are you going to work? Like, are you going to get any sales targets? I'm like, I'm going to be on maths. I'm like, I'm on maths. Like, I'm here. And dad's like, how do you know you're on? I'm like, because I was so different to, well, I was just me. Where all the other girls, like at this stage, I'd had no cosmetic surgery. I was just like this tattooed, very like big personality in a room full of all blonde girls with big Louis Vuitton bags that all looked the same, that spoke the same, that had Mercedes, that all, and I was just me. So that's how I got on maths.
What's the behind the scenes? Like whatever you can and can't say.
I can say whatever. I'm not under good. Contract. I want to know. Let it riff, Jax.
We just want to know. Like, I personally don't watch reality TV. I don't. I just can't. Like, I used to love Big Brother, that kind of shit when I was young. Now I just can't stand it. But
would you go on a reality show?
Maybe, but I guess it's also.
I think you'd be great on a reality
show. I'd be fantastic. Yeah, but same. The issue is I'm married, and then they're going to want to start some controversial, have an affair with this girl, and then the papers will be like, wife back home is this. And I'm like, it'd be a great fucking story as long as it's like well controlled.
Wife back home isn't a professional legal career. Yeah. Who cares?
If you're listening to this, someone, get me on Big Brother. I crush it. But what's the behind the scenes like? Is it scripted? Is it set up when, like, I've watched a couple episodes of Maths when it's on TV and you see the arguments they have at the couch. I'm like, are you told to have the arguments? No. Is it genuinely like, man, this chick, she's a fucking bitch. Like, I'm just going to have a crack at her. Like, Do they just go, hey, free flow and we'll just capture the best parts? Or do they sort of guide you on, hey, we need a little drama this episode. We need a little, like, someone needs to go and fuck in the corner, create some controversy.
Wow.
Maybe not that extent. Big Brother used to have, like, Big Brother Uncut where they'd, like, go and be in the bath. And
it was, I would
sneak out when mum and dad aren't watching me. But, like, you would create that, like, there's always someone steaming up in the corner. But she was supposed to be with him, and it's like, oh my God, I'm so heartbroken. And like, is that stuff real on the show, or is that sort of set up to just give us entertainment?
I think that things are definitely perpetuated. I think that things are definitely blown out of proportion to a certain extent. But like when I first did my wedding dress try on, just say for instance, they would say to me like, hey, Hales, I'll say like, hey, Jackson, I want you to like, so if they have got a question that they want, so they're like, oh, it's hard to explain. So they will ask you a question but want you to put the question within your answer.
Okay.
So they are basically getting what they want out of you, but they don't always do that. You do these things called ad libs where, say, we're at a dinner party, we're talking, everything's really kosher. It's not kosher, it's off the rails basically. But you're doing like just free talking, going back and forward, normal conversing, and then they'll pull you aside for an interview as such. And then with the interviews, they'll be like, because they've been sitting around watching, right? So they know dynamics that you don't know because they've been watching other conversations, and they're like, oh, what do you think about Stacey? Is Stacey a... rah, 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 and they'll be like, okay, before you answer that, can you say, I think about Stacey like this? So it sounds like in your answer when it's edited that you've just naturally said it.
Right, okay.
Without being provoked.
Yeah.
So you're not, you know, told to say things, yeah.
That's interesting. Now, we said earlier at the start, you were the first person to get booted from the show.
Yeah.
How?
So David and I were in a pretty toxic relationship. He was an absolute see you next Tuesday. can I say cunt? He was a cunt.
He was a cunt.
He was a narcissist, and I hate using the word narcissist because it's so overused these days, and I don't think people know the term of it. But he was a narcissist, gaslighter, I'd go as far as saying. And what had happened is there was an incident where he had put my toothbrush in a toilet, and I had used the toothbrush. The scent toothbrush. Mm-hmm. So that happened. Yeah. Look, I did kiss another husband. I'm not going to lie. But I knew my relationship was over. I'd also quit my job to go on the show. And I was like, I've got to make the most of this now that I'm here. I've quit my job. I've left Melbourne. I need to stay on this show for as long this was my ticket to exactly where I'm sitting with you guys today.
And I'm not a deal. Controversy sells.
I'm not a deal. This was my ticket to change my entire life. And I knew that. I knew that going in. Exactly, Jackson, exactly. Any good publicity, bad publicity is as good as good publicity. So anyway, so I'd done that. And then what had ended up happening is we went to Singapore, went to Sentosa for our honeymoon. And...
Okay, I'm just looking at
it. I was like, I need to stop. Went to Sentosa for my honeymoon. He moved out of my room. And then I got to the point where he kept writing leave to leave. And I was like, you know what? I'm going to stay. You can just put up with me. And then he did this massive spiel about how if he's forced to stay with me, that he, this wasn't on TV, but here's some gossip for you, that he was going to unalive himself. And everyone was like, oh, God, this guy's just taking it too far now. This is so dramatic and chaotic that the producer's like, we are sending you to home. Hayley, you have to write leave.
It's interesting. So when they say marry, are you actually getting legally married or is it just a made-up TV marriage? But like once
it's a commitment ceremony.
Once the show stops, you're not actually binded to like, oh, shit, now this guy like takes half my shit. Like it's not like you actually...
I did want to hope not. He had nothing.
Well, they say married at first sight and they put on this big...
They should have married me up if that was the case.
They put on this big ordeal with everything. So I'm like, he's actually getting married.
No, it's a commitment ceremony.
Right.
And this is another funny thing. I got to the end of the aisle and I was so nervous with my dad, and my dad's such a hoot. He's such a laugh. I got to the end. And I had asked for an older man because I dated like younger guys, and I got to the end and then I looked up and I thought the sermon was my husband, and I started talking to him and they're like, oh, and I was like, we had to reshoot. Yeah, because I thought the sermon was my husband.
So we nearly finished this episode, and just like you, I don't want our time together to come to an end, but the good news is, it doesn't have to. Because if you think I'm uncensored here, imagine what I get up to on my OnlyFans. Hit the link below and I will see you in there. Have fun. So obviously since being on Married at First Sight and everything else in between,
yeah.
How do you find dating now, post that, and also being in the adult industry?
Ooh, I think it like goes hand in hand with each other. It's really difficult, really, really difficult. I've really struggled. It is, I think, in a modern day world, really hard for a guy to approach a girl. Like, I don't think men are as confident as what they were, let alone men being as confident as, say, way back when, dealing with someone that's in the public eye as well. Look, you obviously get the DMs from men that you know exactly what that's like too. It's just like, you're definitely not husband material. You're not getting out of my requests, you know. But it's been really difficult. Even just recently, I dated I found a partner, dated him for 9 months, found him in, he was a client through escorting, and he was fine with me working. But this is what I say to everyone. I generally think that to have a relationship that's sustainable, and please God, prove me wrong by giving me a man. to have a relationship that's sustainable within the adult industry, that you need to have had your partner prior to coming into the industry. That's my personal opinion, looking at everyone across the board and the people that I know, because eventually every man's own insecurities eat them up within themselves and they can't deal with it. They all say they can deal with it. They all say they can deal with it to a certain level, but they can't. And that's okay. Because, look, I'll be honest with you. I don't know how I would feel if my partner did it.
Mm. We have a lot of, like, other guests in the industry who are single, men and women, and they say the same to you. They're like, I kind of expect them to support me being in it, but I don't know if I could allow it. It's a good catch-22.
I'm a jealous person, and what's mine is mine. And am I jealous? Or I can be quite insecure as well. And I'm not afraid to admit that. I can be quite insecure. And I think I would always be thinking about things and I'd be inside my own head too much.
Would you be comparing like, oh, what if he collabs with her but she's better than me? And like so you start thinking of things that are completely irrelevant.
Like, is her body like this? Is her body like that? But that's not why your partner obviously loves you. They love you because you're the entirety of a relationship, you know?
I think it also just comes to accept like there's guys Kayla work with that are far bigger than me, far girthier than me, like far, like, but like it's like there's a difference. Is like it's like what's the point of me trying to fight the ego of like, no guy has the biggest, girthiest, perfect dick that fucks like an absolute animal, like unless you're like a Johnny Sins type thing who's been doing it since he was 18. Like, cool, you got the odd guy like him that might just throw it down amazingly. But like I think where men struggle, and I don't know if a guy listens to this and you have relationships, is we just get caught, well, not we because we're a different scenario, but like I think they just get caught in this comparison of it is just insecurity. I don't think the jealousy thing really comes down to it, because if you're dating an industry guy and you're both working with other people, then there's no jealousy because you're both getting your diversity and your fun or whatever you want to call it. The insecurity just comes down to the thoughts of, does she look better than me? Does he like how she operates? Like you start overthinking these things that are completely irrelevant, but like you become your own worst enemy.
I'm a walking contradiction because I don't know if I'd be able to do it. I just don't know if I'd be able to do it. I also think like, this is going to sound so fucked up and it's going to be like, well, you've just said this and now you're doing this and then you do this and you expect that. But like I'm quite a traditionalist in the sense that – but then I'm not, because like obviously I do what I do. It's like, yeah, I'm trying to like still work that out. But, yeah, thus far it's been quite difficult for me to date someone. I also think another thing is that men don't particularly like a woman earning more than them.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, yeah. I mean,
Maybe not. Maybe that's the wrong wording. No, I think
you'd definitely find that it's that primal mentality of like, I need to provide.
Yeah.
She raises the kids, but it's like.
But where I'm at is like, it's the same as I don't have kids or anything. But like, if you're with me and you're in my circle and we're out for dinner, like, I'm just not paying for you. I'm paying for everyone to be on the same level as us, because that's why I do what I do, because I like elevating everyone that's in my circle. You know, that's just what it's like. And then, but you've got to show the other emotional support and the other side of things. You need to bring to the table the other things that the monetary value can't bring.
Yeah. What goes wrong in your, because obviously it's hard for Carl and I to like agree when we have relationship conversations, because we only know what we've known for all the time we've been together. But it fascinates us because we spend a lot of time talking about like, why do they last 2 months? Why can't they be together? And like, we see it across the board with a lot of people of like new relationship, new love. And I always talk about like, I follow a few couples that 6 months together, they'll go and do like a deep breathing exercise together and talk about, you've got to be one with your partner. And then a month later, they're not together.
Yeah.
And I'm like, you're overcomplicating this fucking relationship thing. Like,
mine was a little bit different. My partner that I just found recently had a child, which is to be expected when you're closer to 40 than you are to 30. He was younger, 5 years younger than me. So what comes into play then is a ex-wife.
Did you know about the child? Sorry, before you got...
Yeah, which is fine, because I said to Kayla just before that I don't think that I want kids now, but when I had first met him, I was very, I do want a child kind of thing, but my reality's changed at the moment. That's because of the breakup as well. But his mother, the mother of the child, comes into play and goes, well, I don't want my child hanging around someone that does what she does for work.
Right.
And then they start using the child as a pawn against the father. And then the father can't see his child. So then the dad, my partner, the child's father, is in a situation where now the child's being used as leverage against him, and he's in a situation where he now has to pick to a certain degree. I got to a point where I was like, That's a lie. At the start, I was like, you need, just pick me, let's go. You're going to start another family, da, 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 da. And then I thought about it and I was like, I'm actually not with this guy because he would be the guy that would pick me over his kid. I'm with him because of something more sincere, because he is a great dad and he loves his kid, and it's actually not fair of me to ask him to choose that. And yeah, I pulled the pin.
Did you ever talk with the ex and be like it's not what you think? Like, I'm actually not a bad person to be in your child's life with your ex-husband? Or like, because her misconceptions, a lot of people in the outside world look at you girls and even us guys to an extent and elevate the level of negativity around the industry.
Absolutely.
Did you ever just talk like it's not maybe like these misconceptions you think, it's not really that fucking bad? Like,
no. So my partner, when I met him, was going through a separation, a divorce. He'd been separated for a long period of time, so there was a lot going on. it wasn't really my place as the new person to come in and to discuss anything like that with them. They were also Arabic as a family, which is never going to go down well being in the adult industry.
I guess it's very foreign to that, like that world as well. Like
absolutely. So there are a couple of things at play that made it really difficult.
Take that scenario out. What's the biggest struggle with, because obviously now, like, you know, in your mid to late 30s, it's not about root and boots. You're not looking for fun calls. But I guess it's not a bit like you still get your fix. Like,
I'm,
I guess,
about in the early nights and fast food.
In the early 20s, it's like, I don't really care. If I need attention, I'll get a root and boot type of thing. But obviously now you've matured, it's more I need to find, like,
I want someone to share my life with.
What's the struggle? Does the struggle all come back to you work in the adult field? Or are there other things that come with that?
Oh, I definitely think, like, because I have girlfriends that are going through the same struggles as me that aren't in the adult industry. I've got more friends outside of the adult industry than I do in the adult industry. And I think these days that we live in a world where things are highly disposable and people aren't willing to put in the effort. There's effort required for good and bad. Mm. And in a relationship, it requires consistent work. When you first meet someone, you're putting in a lot of effort. Girls are doing up their hair. It's continuous text messages. And then that, like, kind of stops and falls off. I just don't think that people are used to putting in the effort that's required to make something sustainable that's good long term. I also think when you then mix in the adult industry as such, I get a lot of guys expecting that 1% that we were talking about earlier, that image of Hayley Vernon, and the Hayley Vernon, that fraction of the thing, it's a character. Look, I'm a sexy goddess, but, like, I'm also, the biggest part of me is a dorky dancer. Like, it's very far removed from actually who I am. Yeah. So they're meeting me thinking that, actually they're meeting me with this idea of who I am in their head instead of actually listening to what's coming out of my mouth. Because if they open these, they shut this, open the ears, they would have a pretty good fucking idea of who I am as a person, but they're not. They're hanging on to this preconceived notion of actually who I am, and I think that's where the penny drops.
And the hardest thing is for you girls, it's like finding the small minority of men who don't watch you guys. Like, I look at some of the inboxes that Kayla would get from guys, and, like, I'm just like, as a guy, I'm like, do you really send that to somebody and think it's going to work? Like, I don't understand is that the mentality of some of the guys we have? And, like, that's just not going
to
work.
But do you think, I also reckon it comes down to women. Have women set the bar, like, are there so many, like, this is, I don't know if you agree with me, like, are there women that are jumping at that and that's why they think it's, like, okay to do? Like,
I think it's a combination of both, because I've met women in the industry and I've spoken. I think some girls set the bar
low.
Well, and I think on the opposite. I think some girls set the bar too high, where they're not allowing the man and them to grow together. I've had some girls I've spoken to, and their bar is set so high, the guy needs to have this. And I'm like, the chances of you finding that are so fucking hard. Like, why don't you just be okay with him having this and this?
You know,
and then this, you guys can build together with a little bit of effort. It's very hard to find a guy that has money, has his head screwed on, doesn't party on the weekends, doesn't have a child, isn't hiding secrets from you. Most men that have money who do that, they're more than likely hiring escorts and fucking behind your back, right? Like, so why don't you just settle, have the bar set a little higher? But I think women are settling, like, it's I need to find Mr. fucking perfect. And if he doesn't tick my box.
Yeah, I'm not even like.
Drop it a little bit.
I listened to this podcast called Single at 30. And she did the stats, the statistician. She wanted, like, a guy that earned over 100,000, 6'2", this and that. Ended up being like 3 people in the whole of Sydney.
Yeah.
That met her criteria. Like, crazy, 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 crazy. And I was just like, ooh, like, okay. Yeah, insane numbers, right? And then they did it a bit broader, but took out, like, some of the variables. And it was still like 200 people in, like, the whole of the state. And I was like, this is insane. I'm not even there. If anyone's listening, I'd like a good guy.
Uncensored listeners, fun.
At the end of the day, I just want a good guy that I can share mutual respect with, have a bit of fun with. But, I don't know. I don't know what it is. I'm a big believer that the universe will give me what I want when I need it. But for now,
It is the problem, obviously. Like, it's like looks are, like, there's always a, like I say to Kayla, we play this game all the time. Like, we perv for each other and hook each other up and like eye candy each other if we're walking the beach, like we look to your left. Like,
interesting.
Well, the way we look at it is like if a babe's gonna walk past, I'm gonna look anyway.
Yeah.
And I'd rather her be like, check it on your left versus me looking and her being like, who are you looking at? Like, because a lot of like I've seen couples have that, why are you perving in public? And it's like, everyone's going to perv. You're fucking living in a blank world if you think you're at the beach and this hottie walks past McKinney, your man's not at least going to look. He's not going to run up and be like, wait, come on. Like, but he's going to look and vice versa. For a hot, like, I don't have a mad six pack. So if a hot dude with abs walks past, she's going to look. What am I going to do? Like, I mean, like, it's people.
It's natural. It's human.
People just live in that too many rules and it's like this social media. Like I look at Megan Fox and I'm like, you are, there's nothing wrong with you. But I've never met you, right? It's like I might meet her and she might talk to me and have these personality. Like I read something between her and Machine Gun Kelly and they were dating. They drank each other's blood. It's like that was like what they were genuinely into. That grosses me the fuck out. But if I ignore all of that and I just look at her, she's the greatest thing to walk the planet. And I think that's also the problem that you guys may face is you either get looked at on one aspect of you're in the porn world, so you become a trophy, as in I can fuck you and then I can go and tell my mates and it elevates my level of boyness with the boys because I'm banging these girls that are on Pornhub.
And the way that I fuck, like in my private life, is very different to how I fuck on camera. You would know this 100%. As well. And guys just want to, like, when they're having, and I like, my barriers are kind of really up as well. And this is what I was going to say, totally irrelevant, but kind of relevant. When I come to choosing guys, I have these trust issues that have come out of now being an escort because I'm like, I know what all you and men that use escorts don't discriminate. And now, like, I also have that in the back of my head when it comes to things as well. So it's both.
It's interesting. And I guess if you're listening, we're going to wrap this podcast up now. If you're listening, you're a single fella, you know, just dial 1300 Uncensored Podcast and we'll set you up with all of our single friends that come on this episode. We are actually thinking about running an event. I don't know. Well, I've got every person that we collab with comes on the episode. They're all single women in the industry. And then I've got all these single guys.
We need non-industry people. This is the thing.
Non-industry
men. You don't
want
to shit where you sleep. Like, yeah. You don't. Correct. You don't want to go to.
No, I'm talking about non-industry men that I get messages like, oh, who is that girl you collab with? And I'm like you put, like from that perspective, but then I got all these girls like, I can't find a guy. And it's like, Matt, I'm just going to morph and manifest that I'm going to create some sort of event, reality TV show.
I really want to do an industry Christmas party.
Put them together.
But with like friends, that would be cool. Friends and family, because we don't do stuff like that. Yeah.
Just got to match make people. People have to talk to each other in person outside of the stigma of who they have to play the role of, the character of who you are on scene. Let's scrap that ego and let people actually meet the real life person. And this is going from I've spoken to you, I've spoken to Dale, I've spoken to, you know, like men and women of the same status that just seek the same thing but have the same struggles. And it's like, well, there has to be a common in between the same struggles that Dale would have and the same struggles that you were having, probably the exact same thing.
Yeah.
It's like, how do we just remove
the same struggle that a businessman would deal with when he's working too much and you know what I mean? Same, but different.
Yeah. It's like if we just all work out what that middle thing is, we could step over it and then poof, there'll be blossoming love everywhere around the industry.
If only it was that easy.
Hey?
If only it was that easy.
Well, I don't complicate
it. I feel like
it.
Jackson's solution-based and we're going to get an answer for this.
Well, we've been together for, you know, 16 years or whatever and it's just 16 like...
16 years.
It's...
16 years. How old are you guys?
32.
100?
Yeah.
Great.
But like I say to all the people...
not a lot of people that can say that these days.
No, I know one person that's had us covered from our age. But like this also comes with a shitload of fighting, a shitload of arguing, a shitload of like you said earlier, it's so much easier to chase the six-month thrill, get the early sex, get the butterfly feeling, dump that, find the next one.
Yeah.
It's really difficult to get through that and be like, oh. And then like still, like, but you know what I mean? Like that disappears and then you have to make the effort of like communication and effort. And then when you have a fight, you have to like, you know, learn compassion. All these things are important in a relationship. And it's just like it's so simple in my head. Like I think when I look at how single people go about it, like you just complicate this single get into relationship. You talk too much. You're asking for too much. Why don't you just fucking start with the basic and see if you like each other, and then you can just build the rest together. Like, but I feel like there's just this gap in the middle that we can fix. And now we're having a general conversation with each other, and the listeners got to hear all of that. So we're gonna wrap it up now, guys. So you know where to find us. It's YouTube, Twitter, TikTok, Facebook, Instagram, Spotify, iTunes. You name it. Hayley, we always like to have our guests plug themselves at the very end. So where can people find you?
Hayley Vernon_ on Instagram, or I have naughty side.
which is linked to the Instagram. You can find it all. Well, Hayley, thank you for your time today. Guys, You're thanks welcome. For listening. Thank Until you. Next time on the Uncensored Podcast. Speak to you soon.